former general manager, scout in the National Hockey League for both the Dallas Stars and the Calgary Flames. He's now analyst on TSN, joins us now. Butts, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm outstanding. So now, I was watching on Trade Deadline. You guys did a great job, especially because you had a lot of time to fill. I think it was like the first 5 hours. I don't think there was one trade. So lots of stuff going on. Patrick Maroon, you didn't like this trade for the Oilers?
No, I didn't say that. I said he plays at a slow pace.
Yeah, which now, okay, and that part I will agree with.
That's all I said.
Yeah, okay. Do you think, like, the Oilers, they had a lot of guys who really could only play at one pace, right, which was fast, not overly physical. It's a good combination to have some guys who, like Maroon, maybe aren't fast, but can play a slow pace and dominate teams in a different way.
So you're telling me he's a dominant player now?
No. Well, he can dominate in certain areas of the ice, I think, with his size and speed.
I know, and the Anaheim Ducks, who are trying to win a Stanley Cup, are trading players like that away. Give me a break. I mean, Patrick Maroon is wildly inconsistent. He has shown flashes of really good, solid play, but the inconsistency, the periods of inconsistency and unproductive play have been a lot longer. Good teams don't trade good players at the deadline, Jason. So, you know what? If you want to take a chance on it based on Martin Gernat, that's fine. I accept that. But don't try to convince me that Patrick Maroon is a good player.
Really? Okay, well, we'll disagree on that. Because here's the thing about Maroon. I look at his numbers. When, A, you gave up nothing to get him. Martin Gernat's never playing anywhere, right?
Okay, that's fine. I'm just saying. But, like, we're talking about two different things. I'm talking about the player, and I think it's great. You want to give up something to get something, that's fine. I'm not suggesting you gave up anything. What I'm suggesting is the Anaheim Ducks are a Stanley Cup contender. You're telling me how competitive he is and how good he is. Wow. I guess Bob Murray doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, here's my question, Craig. You look at last year in the playoffs, he played 18 minutes a night, fifth most amongst their forwards, had 11 points, tied for second in goals. I think he's proven that he could be. He had a down year this year, no doubt. And I do think at times, people over time will make a decision. They brought in McGinn and Peary. And I think the reason they move Maroon, sure, he's inconsistent, but they have a lot of Patrick Maroon, right? Him and Stewart aren't much different other than Stewart, when he's on, has more talent. I'm not sure he's any more consistent than Patrick Maroon.
I said the same thing about Chris Stewart during free agency. I said, buyer beware. Like, to me, players like this aren't changing. As long as you know what you're getting, as long as you know you're going to get an inconsistent player with flashes of really good play, then that's fine. And you're not giving up anything. I get it. But I'm not suggesting that Patrick Maroon is anything less than he is. I'm not suggesting he's anything more than he is. I just said he doesn't play at a high pace. And he's been very inconsistent in his game. Now, maybe he evens it out. I go with the Red Auerbach. You know what? Red Auerbach's great line when asked about change. He said, they tell me 1 in 100 change. He said two things. I'm not in the business of change, and I don't like those odds.
Yeah, and that's fair. There is, I think for Edmonton, it's a low-risk buy, especially when they convince the Ducks to keep 25% of his salary. For $1.5 million, if he's inconsistent, you're kind of paying him almost to be an inconsistent player when he's got that many games experience. But if he becomes that guy like a Dan Cleary, for instance, who took a long time to finally figure it out, then maybe, you know, then it works out to be a steal. Because there's no risk for me giving up a fourth rounder and Martin Gernat, who was never, ever playing in the NHL.
I can only tell you this, right? Like, you know what? I don't have a crystal ball to look in the future. I can only deal with now. I can only deal with what I've seen. I can only deal with what I've seen up to this point. I've said it. I invoke the Red Auerbach all the time. I'm not in the business of change. Maybe he changes. Great. Maybe he changes. That's okay. The people all have to weigh their own risk. I stand behind what I said.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. What did you make of the Cassian deal when it went down? Did you like that risk?
It's the same thing. Zach Cassian is what he is. No, I don't. I don't. You know, like, all this idea about you're going to take these players and change them. Like, you're not changing them.
Okay. But do you need – Zach Cassian doesn't need to be a great player, Craig, for the Oilers to be successful, does he?
Okay. Great. We'll keep taking chances on players. Maybe they'll move up to 29th in the league one day.
So you honestly don't think the Oilers are a better overall team? Because keep in mind, they've been the basement dweller, man, so it's not hard to improve. But for Cassian, for Scrivens, which was never going to play, for Maroon, for guys who don't cost you a lot of money, when I look at Chicago and the teams that win, they have tons of inconsistent players. They've just got 8 or 9 really dominant players, right? I don't expect these guys to be the dominant.
Who's inconsistent on Chicago?
Well, Kruger, he's been inconsistent over time. Like, they got a lot of...
Kruger's inconsistent. Kruger's a great fourth line, but he's been hurt this year.
Yeah.
Kruger hasn't been inconsistent. Kruger's won 2 Stanley Cups.
Well, I would look at... when they won Cups, would Dustin Byfuglien be inconsistent on their team at that time of his career?
Dustin Byfuglien was a guy that they had to move because of salary cap implications.
Yeah, but he was also playing four and didn't play D on their team.
Well, I just know this, like... Who were the Chicago Blackhawks trading before the trade deadline?
Well, they traded. Yeah, what did you make of that Ehrhoff or Scuderi deal?
Well, it was just Scuderi wasn't going to play for them. No, but like I'm asking you.
Okay, Brian Bickle, if you can't, Brian Bickle.
Sure.
Well, okay, but Brian Bickle, we're talking inconsistent players. Brian Bickle would be the poster boy of Maroon.
They didn't trade him. Didn't trade him before the deadline.
No, but they won with him. Is my point.
Listen. Each to their own. I am just saying, I don't believe players like Chris Stewart, Zach Cassian, Patrick Maroon are changing. If they do, good on them. I've watched them long enough. I have my own assessment of them. If they change, great. Great. I give them all the marks in the world. But at the end of the day, up to this point in time, I'm not buying.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. Now, Craig, that leads me to a really interesting question, because as a pro scout, I think you look at players and, okay, they're in the NHL. We don't think they're going to change. When you're drafting amateur players who are 17 years of age, right, can you see, like, Chris Stewart was a first-round pick, right? Like, and I didn't know enough about Chris Stewart out of junior if he was wildly inconsistent then or if he was just dominant because he was physically stronger than everyone else. Can you apply the same theory when you're drafting young kids, or do you have to have more leeway because at that age they're not a finished product?
Listen, I think when you're evaluating players for the draft, you have to be able to differentiate between, is a player able to dominate because he's more powerful, more skilled, bigger and stronger than somebody, which happens a lot of times, and it happens in a lot of cases, and are players consistently competitive? I can show you my reports on Chris Stewart when he was in junior. Inconsistent competitor.
Okay. Looking at this year's draft class.
So what I'm really telling you is, no, I really don't think it changes.
Okay. So when you look at this year's draft class, Craig, and you know, there's going to be some kids, it's safe to say, that are going to be taken in the first round who probably are still going to have inconsistency with them. Is that fair?
Well, inconsistency, I'm not talking about inconsistency and understanding how your game is or lack of strength or, you know, understanding how to get your skills into the game. I'm talking about competing. I'm talking about digging in and competing. I'm talking about when it gets hard or you're strong on the puck or you're hard on the puck. You go back to any draft, and I can pretty much guarantee you, Jason, that in the vast majority of drafts, the players that were drafted in the first or second rounds, okay, that didn't make it, for the most part, were either not very competitive or not very smart.
Smart
or
is
a combination of the both.
Yeah, Craig Button. So that leads me to the question. Why would they be like, I get the competitive thing, but if a player doesn't have the hockey sense, why do people still draft them in the first 2 rounds?
Because people get seduced by flash and dash.
I like the short answer, because I totally agree with you on that one. And I think there's a few examples that we know in certain places that now it's.
Well, I'm not trying to put you on the spot here. Okay. I'm not trying to put you on the spot here. Okay. And I'm really not. So let me just put it into this in this perspective, okay? And I go and I watch young players, and I see them at a young age, and I see players that are considerably better because of their skill. Mm-hmm. And then I watch them from the time, like I'm lucky. I get to watch them for the most part from the time they're 15. And then you get to see how they grow. I was just at a minor midget game in Toronto where there's probably going to be anywhere between 6 and 9 kids drafted in the first round between 2 teams of the OHL draft. It's only 20 players. So I got at least 6 kids that are going to be drafted. So now I'm watching them. I just want to see how they are at that. It was a playoff game. I get to watch and get to see where they're at. And, you know, I'm not making any hard and fast evaluations. I'm just logging it. Because what ends up happening is, as time goes on, and now the challenges get harder, and they have to think their way or dig in and compete a little bit harder, you have a benchmark. And you see that all the time. Now, your nephew is a really good player in Moose Jaw, okay? I watched Noah for a number of years. He's got a lot of flash and dash to him. But I tell you what, you want to evaluate the hard areas of the game, digging in, being productive? Noah's pretty darn productive. And I can guarantee you there will be players drafted before him that aren't as good a player, in my view.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. And because it's interesting, Craig, you being a scout, and you've probably sat with guys who you respect a lot in their scouting abilities, and you guys have probably went head-to-head on difference of value in players, right? Like, you might have certain bases of foundations of things you like, but it's funny how even a lot of, you know, guys who have done it for a long time at certain times will still have a bias about a certain player. Did you ever find, like, was there a challenge when you first started scouting that you recognized in your analysis and said, okay, you know what? I think I'm overrating something on players across the board, and I've got to learn from that and change it. How do scouts evolve over time?
Yeah, you know what? Great question. Let me tell. Hey, listen, I still make mistakes, and I think the biggest thing for a scout, Jason, is to know their bias. Know your own bias. So for me, you know, I struggle with players that don't have good hockey sense and varying degrees. Now, remember, hockey sense comes in varying degrees, okay? I'm not talking about... I really like players that can think and can manage different situations and understand what's unfolding in front of them and take advantage. So I know that I have a bias towards players that might not be as, but does it mean it they're not going to play? Like earlier on when I was younger, he's not that smart. He's not. Well, you know what? Players can play that aren't that smart, that maybe just have average hockey sense or good hockey sense. And I've learned that over time. The other thing, too, is the NHL isn't made up of just every single player has 100% competitiveness. Mm-hmm. There's varying degrees of competitiveness. What I worry about, and this is where I go back to Patrick Maroon, to Zach Cassian, to the Chris Stewarts of the world, right, is the wild inconsistency in their competitiveness. You know, that you know, you see it, then you don't see it. You see it, then you don't see it. So it's not even so much that they don't have it, but they're not able to bring it out in themselves on a consistent enough basis. And Brian Bickle's a great example of that. I think he fits into that category perfectly. But at the same time, you have to recognize where are you taking these players. I think Brian Bickle was a fourth-round draft pick. So the draft becomes very different. Like, for me, where Patrick Maroon was drafted, I wouldn't have a problem drafting Patrick Maroon because one thing I think about Patrick, I think he's a smart player. But you can't be a smart player and be able – you cannot not be a smart player and play with the likes of Getzlaff and those guys. He's got hockey sense, and he's got some ability around the net. The fact is, for me, he's just so inconsistent in how he plays. And that can go from shift to shift, game to game, week to week. And, you know, that's the thing that I think you want to evaluate deeper. And over a long period of time, you know, you look at it and you go, well, they've given them opportunity in Anaheim, and you give opportunity to other players. But why are teams, and I always ask myself this question, why are teams trading big players, skilled players, you know, guys that can score? Like, there has to be a reason why they're being traded.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's some guys fall out of place, and we've seen guys get traded and turn out very good elsewhere, and some guys get traded and continue to be the inconsistent player, i.e. Justin Schultz, who I wonder when we talk about the competitiveness, Craig, that's what's lacking in his game, and I'm just not sure, you know, he can muster it up. And then when you throw in no confidence in Edmonton, like he needed to get out of Edmonton. That was obvious. I think whether it's Pittsburgh or any other team, there's no one that's going to qualify him. I think a team's going to re-sign him at a much lower contract and see if maybe they can find the player who they thought had some skill there. But if they expect him to be a highly competitive guy, it's never happening.
Well, no, and I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, when I watch Justin Schultz in the BCHL, then in college, in the American Hockey League, you're going, geez, like what a dynamic player. But and certainly that was a player I thought was going to be a very good NHL player. I was wrong. Because you know what? I missed? I missed that lack of competitiveness. And I'm not even like, you know what? Like, it's about he started to lack competitiveness with the puck and driving offense. I don't even care if he doesn't play great defense as long as he drove the offense. He stopped doing that too, and I think that's a good example. And you're right; changes have to be made. Now, I am not suggesting that Patrick Maroon can't help a team. But you know what? Know what you're getting. That's all I'm saying.
Craig, it'll be interesting. That's why I like to have you on, man. We don't always have to agree. Otherwise, we'd be boring as hell. What are you watching this weekend?
Okay, I got to ask you a question. Somebody asked me to ask you, what's your idea for eliminating offsides?
Oh, Ferraro? Yeah, you know what I said? Hey, I looked at it and said, you know what? First of all, I'd eliminate the worst rule in hockey, which is the offside review rule. It's a freaking joke. All it does is eliminate goals. It doesn't ever do anything else. It's one-sided. It's a bogus rule. And there was a call last night in Philadelphia that clearly was onside. They blow the whistle. So there's no one going back to change that. How do we know a goal doesn't score? So, A, that would be the first thing. All I said was, does offsides really impact the game in hockey? And I looked and said, is it something that I would contemplate to try for a game? I probably would at lower levels. But to me, I watch offside, and I see far too often. And at the very worst, Craig, I would go to the ball hockey zone. The minute you cross the blue line, the offensive zone becomes the center line like in ball hockey. And when guys can't keep the puck in by a millimeter in a game that can't keep offense going, I don't see why I would suddenly have guys retreat. There's way too much time spent in the neutral zone where nothing happens in hockey. There's no reason for it.
Well, you know what? Like, see, what I love about it is the thinking part, right? And the thinking part is like this whole idea with the back skate being up and go. Like, I think it's stupid too. I really do this offside stuff. You know, the offsides that are clearly blatant, the officials don't miss them. They don't miss them. So now we're measuring it in millimeters, right? And I tend to agree with you. I think that we got to expand. We got to expand the. The offensive zone, and ideas have to be brought forth, and I just wanted to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I would look, the rule, first of all, get the hell out of it. It's a terrible rule. Like, that one's awful because, if the ref misses an offside by that, like, the Lander, the last game, like, what they called the goal back on had zero bearing. Like, he was on the other side. It was literally like a skate blade. That had nothing to do with the goal. Right. And so I get that the lines would miss it. It's that close of a call going that fast. I don't have a problem with it. But, you know, so you take a goal away for what? You can never add a goal back on when the lines win. If they're missing offsides by a blade one way, you can't tell me, Craig, that they're whistling some down that aren't offside.
No, I totally agree. Well, Jeff O'Neill has an interesting take on that, too. He says that once you cross the zone and you're into the zone and the puck changes possession. Like whether like it goes off the boards or it goes off the goalie pads or the other team has it or another player on your team has it, that you can't go back on offside. So now the offside didn't create an advantage, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I would agree with you wholeheartedly. Yeah, that's bang on true because now there was the one goal. I think they had it at 48 seconds after the offside. Oh. You're like, really? Like, come on now. I think that might be a little ridiculous.
Mike Murphy, vice president of hockey ops, senior vice president of hockey. You know what he told me? He told me this, I don't know how many years ago, 3 or 4, when the whole idea of the challenge was coming up. He said, you wait, Craig. He says, what's going to happen is, especially in the third period, he says, coaches are going to use this review as a chance to get a longer timeout. So what happens now when a goal goes in with 8 minutes left or 7 minutes left? What do they do? Boom. Challenge it. Maybe it takes 6 minutes. They get a good rest for their team.
Well, geez.
That's the other problem.
Well, hey, wait till the playoffs come around, Craig, and you have a goal like that that's disallowed on a play that's so close, and they review it for 6 minutes, and they don't even know if it's right or wrong.
Well, and that's the whole thing, right? It's the game flow.
Yeah. Well, but so you know what?
Okay, good.
Tomorrow, I'm gonna find a guy next week that gets you fired up as Patrick Maroon. That'll be awesome. So we'll have fun with that.
Listen, I don't have any. I'm not negative on Patrick Maroon. It's just, you know, I was just trying to describe what I thought. Like, what they're getting. But at the end of the day, you don't have a problem getting me fired up. You got passion. I got passion.